WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk. It is February 6th. Still feels like February 5th. I don't think I've woken up from last night's football game, the Super Bowl. Sure to be a common thread throughout the program with some of my guests.
It was tough to ring the bell this morning, that's for sure.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Then, of course, that voice is the first up for the State House Report, none other than State Representative Jeff Deal, who'll be joining me for a segment.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Quick rundown as to who we have on. So Jeff will be up, batting leadoff. I am kind of talking that way because I believe the equipment truck.
That means I'm a singles guy. You know, that means I'm supposed to hit the singles.
Look at Mookie. Whoa. Mookie Betts.
Well,
is not a singles guy.
I know.
He came in second in the MVP.
Yeah. Maybe I should be hitting for power, but I'll leave that up to Mike.
Absolutely. Actually, Mike Mullen, Rockland Selectman, is here. He's going to talk a little bit about an upcoming event later this week. So Mike will join us at 6:40. 7 o'clock. I like to do from time to time is try to do a little cross-promotion with some of the other folks who have programs here on WATD, and that will be the theme at 7 o'clock. Peter Smith from WATD's Antique Air Show.
The
Peter Smith. Why, do you know Peter?
I don't know Peter, but that show it's legendary.
Okay. Well, Peter will be in here, and we'll talk a little bit about Peter, what the radio show and the art of antiques, and is it anything like the Antique Roadshow?
I was just going to say.
Folks love on GBH.
That was must-watch TV when it first came out.
It still is. It's still, you know, the people bring it in, they're like, oh, I don't know what it's worth. He bought it for $4 at a flea market about 6 years ago. And then they're like, well, you've stumbled upon quite a find here. This is worth about $700. And then they'll give you like the history and the background to it. And like, wow.
I wish I knew who that show was produced because, I mean, how does somebody on site happen to know exactly the history of some of these things they bring
There's things that happen behind scenes. I'll give you an example. I actually had a chance to do a feature story about a local elected official who actually was on Pawn Stars. And he actually gave me the background to that as to what happened. Because what ends up happening, if you watch Pawn Stars, what happens is somebody will come in and they want to sell something and they think it's of a certain value. A lot of times, the people going in to sell, they've got an inflated value as, oh, yeah.
No.
You know, they'll want a certain amount. Sometimes they're wrong. Other times, depending on the person who might have signed it, or they might have got it from, or the era it comes from, it depends. But you know, the fun part is finding out if there's a little history. And I guess there's, from what I understand, is that what you see on TV isn't actually what is going on in that pawn store. That there's actually another set, and that the expert who's called in is kind of standing off camera. Got it. And so then they bring them on, and they kind of give the whole background, and then the fun of bartering, and I gotta make some money on this, so I'll give you $500.
But the best is when somebody thinks they have a $5,000 painting, and it turns out it's a $50 reproduction, yeah, or something like that.
I'll give you $40 for it.
That's right. By the way, I think in 50 years we're going to see Tom Brady's game jersey pop up at an antiques roadshow thing.
Right? There's the one story behind this. How does somebody go into Tom Brady's bag?
Twice, I've heard it. He said
it happened 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
There's a little thing called a lock. They have those bags with like little mini locks on them.
Knowing that he pulls a decent salary, I would think that he would have like maybe one of his bodyguards there or something. Maybe he would have somebody who would like, you know, police that.
Well, who knows? Maybe there's a whole...
You know how that story broke, don't you? There was a reporter that was actually in... one of the many reporters that were kind of wandering around in the locker room. And Robert Kraft was going around handing out cigars. And when he went over to Tom, that was the first thing he goes, someone just stole my... He goes, oh, thanks. He goes, someone just stole my jersey out of my bag. I don't know. And then there's a little chatter about something else. But it was very, very interesting that...
I would like to steal the Falcons owner's three-piece suit. That seems like it was worth a few bucks.
Well, yeah, but he didn't do much dancing in it last night.
Arthur Blank, no.
All right, time for us to pull the show over to the side of the road for a few moments here as we're in the WATD Traffic Center, brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, and Stoughton. And the mighty Malcolm Alter is on the line. Sir, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm recovering from last night's football game. I know it's not something you partake in, but I can tell you it was terrific theater last night.
I did watch some of it. I was at a Super Bowl party.
Oh, you
but
were?
I can't get religious about it. You know that.
No. But you were there for the goodies more so than you were for the football game.
Well, for both, yeah. But, you know, when you asked me who do I think was going to win, and I had to hold my tongue without being flippant and say whoever scored the most. You know?
But that would have been accurate.
That's true.
Definitely would have been accurate.
Yeah, and nobody could have predicted this.
No, nobody could have predicted this. Just like the blizzard of 78, which happened, 39 years ago, I think right around this time frame.
I remember it vividly.
Yes, not a lot of traffic going on, just a lot of people stuck in it. So,
there was traffic. Route 128 was a parking lot.
That's right.
Now, did you cover it that day?
No, I was in between jobs, as a matter of fact. I had just gotten laid off from a radio station. And a few days later, at once I was able to get on the T, I went to work for another one.
How dare they?
Well.
Think like a spicy champion. Spicy. Act like a spicy champion. Talk like a spicy champion. Spicy. And then eat like one with Big Poppy's spicy salsa. Spicy. Then you'll be a champion. Then celebrate your championship with Big Poppy's spicy cigar.
Spicy.
Sold exclusively on the South Shore and South Coast at none other than Brennan's Smoke Shop. Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and coming soon to Pope's Island, New Bedford. Trust me, the salsa is good, dudes.
Spicy.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, back by popular demand. Monday Night Talk, first show of February 2017, and also back by popular demand is State Representative Jeff Deal, representing the 7th Plymouth District, which is a part of East Bridgewater. Well, there's three precincts.
2 through 4.
And then Whitman and Abington.
That's right.
And, just to start things off on a light note, so your thoughts. When you know, watching that game, it was kind of surreal, the first half, because the first thing that raced through my mind, and I don't know how far back your... you know, following sports or football. Mine was when the Patriots took on the mighty 1985 Chicago Bears.
I was living in Illinois at the time, following the Bears. I was actually at the game when Walter Payton broke Jim Brown's rushing record. So, of course, the Junkyard Dog defense, Mike Singletary is the linebacker. That was a heck of a team to watch.
So, wait,
and my father-in-law and I definitely have our arguments about, you know, the results.
So your rooting interest at that time was?
It was the Bears. The Bears. I was there for Michael Jordan, those golden years. But yeah, no, it was exciting.
Who knew? Deep down inside.
I know. My mom remarried, and we were out in Illinois for 10 years.
North side, south side?
North Shore. Yep. So Cubs fan, too. Okay. Which made this last World Series. Great. I was hoping it was going to be a Red Sox Cubs series. But
I've been out that way a number of times, as I have family out in South Dakota, so I've driven through 90-94 in that area, and the height of traffic, and
I love Buffalo. Not the city, but the Buffalo in South Dakota, right?
Right. Right, exactly.
I've seen them along the road there, right? It's crazy. My dad took me on a trip out west.
Heading to Wald Rug. The many a sign that start in
Chicago.
You got
to get that bumper sticker, just like south of the border down as you head into Florida.
It's the same thing, yeah. The idea of it. And it's just like a little strip mall that... I don't know how we're doing this. We're kind of just going off track here, but yeah.
Sorry.
It's all good, last night's game.
It's all I've
back to so back to the game. I believe the Patriots were up 3-0 in that game, and then Jim McMahon and that mighty defense just killed the Patriots.
Yeah.
But Tony Eason, then they brought out they pulled Steve Grogan off the sideline, but it didn't stop.
I saw Steve Grogan about 4 or 5 years ago on a campaign stop for Scott Brown's reelection for Senate, and it was one of those legendary moments because I had his football card when I was a kid, and I see it, I'm like, oh my God, it's Steve Grogan, right?
Oh,
it was
amazing.
But the saddest part about that football game was that Mike Ditka put William Refrigerator Perry in to run the ball in for the game-winning touchdown, and Walter Payton never scored a touchdown in that game. The guy who probably was the heart and soul, I mean, one of the best rushing backs ever, and he doesn't even get a chance to score in that game. So that was one of the sad things that came out of that game for Chicago.
Well, then the New England fans, I mean, that was, we finally had got by the Miami Dolphins, squished the fish and all that, and here we are, we're going to do it, and then just to get crushed.
But look where they are now.
But what? So correlating between
much better than
that
the Bears
game,
team,
but when the Patriots were down 28-3, I was saying to myself, I'm like, oh my God, like it's going to be nobody, because everybody, a lot of the sports prognosticators, they're all going, Patriots are going to kill them. It happens all the time, but usually the Patriots aren't known to. I mean, it comes down to basically almost the last play, just like it did 2 years ago. Last night, same thing.
What is Vegas? Where was Vegas on this one? They were completely off, and then it turns out they weren't.
Well, again, it's a game of two halves, and 14 of those points were
this wasn't two halves. This was 1.5 quarters for the Patriots to try to rebound. This was close.
It was, but the Patriots, turnovers were their undoing in the first half of the game, with LeGarrette Blunt getting stripped
Somebody
of the football.
Said if the Falcons got two turnovers, they were going to win. They did, except that they gave one of those back when Hightower hit...
Dante Hightower did the...
hit Matt Ryan.
A strip sack also.
Right. So, I mean, you got back one, and I think that was the difference. That really was the difference.
Because I couldn't believe, I'm like, on this... It's just not going to happen. I refused.
David Tyree, when the Giants played the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and he was able to hold that ball against his helmet.
Well, he had enough stick 'em on his hands.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah. You're going, well, this will never happen for the Patriots. And sure enough, Amendola gets that inches above.
Edelman.
I'm sorry, Edelman. That's
Edelman,
right. Gets
yes.
gets his hands right under that with about an inch to spare.
Amendola was the one who was, because Brady was targeting him, that the pick six happened.
That's right.
So it was very interesting, and again, it's one for the ages, and it was also fun to hear the Patriots fans who were there was a large group of them there, not too thrilled with Roger, and let Roger know that they weren't too thrilled.
Oh yeah,
with
that
him.
Booing was amazing.
It was
amazing.
Definitely.
But what was nice too was seeing Tom Brady's mother right there down at that stand. She's been through some illnesses. We saw her, Tom's father, his children. For a guy who was suspended for the first four games of the season, what a way to finish with a historic fifth Super Bowl win, fifth ring. No other quarterback now has that to fall back on. And he was the MVP for the fourth time.
Oh, and what's even funnier here is just to kind of wrap up the Super Bowl talk, Matt Ryan winning the league MVP
the day before.
The day before, although he was given a little bit of a heads up a week prior by the NFL that he was going to win it. But he is the eighth consecutive NFL MVP who has made it to the big game and lost. The last one who has been successful was the guy who's being enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
So is that
Kurt Warner? It's been a while.
Is that the new John Madden
curse? Yes.
Curse where
yes.
If you're on the cover of that.
Yeah, like Gronkowski was on the cover. He got hurt. Yeah, it's a curse. Yes, it basically
don't give me
is.
The MVP if I'm going to the Super Bowl.
Now we were talking about booing. You know, I'm surprised that we don't hear a lot of booing when folks see some of our legislators who decided to vote themselves a little bit of a raise.
There was some booing online and with the reaction of newspapers across the state were pretty unhappy with this thing. I don't think even the Globe couldn't really defend this one.
What's your thought as a legislator, somebody who has fought for the taxpayers and been out there on the front lines? I mean, again, a Pauley Award winning guy.
And the Pauley Award was for the gas tax.
For the gas tax.
Which was question one in 2014.
Right, which would have been an automatic tax that wouldn't have been voted by the legislators. It would have just been kicking in automatically, right?
And our argument to repeal that, which the people did repeal it, and by the way, that ballot question outperformed the governor's race by 50,000 votes. We actually said, look, the state is spending four times the national average on road maintenance, 645,000 a road mile. I'm sorry, 675,000 a road mile, and the national average is $145,000 a road mile, including New Hampshire. Mm. So we proved that, you know, they really couldn't justify the increase. And so it's funny because that ballot question won in November, but the session doesn't technically end until January when the new session's sworn in. So they also had just had that commission report out in 2014 about these pay raises. And so what I ended up doing was spending the last several weeks in December.
You're lurking.
In December.
Right.
In informal sessions, just sitting there to make sure that they didn't bring that bill out and I was blocking it. So we found out now that the cost of that is between $12 to $18 million annually, and so I was able to save an extra, you know, $24 to $36 million, you know, just from blocking that for 2 years. But once they came into full session, I think the Democrats wanted to just get this done first thing, and so as soon as we were sworn in, before we even took up rules or any other bill, they did this, you know, pay increase bill, and I don't think I'm not sure how many people haven't heard about it, but if you haven't, it basically gave really exorbitant raises to the Speaker of the House, the Senate President, and all the constitutional officers. And right. To make it repeal proof, they added a $25,000 annual bonus increase to judges. So it was certainly something that I think the people reacted to correctly. We are in the middle of 9C cuts by the governor, meaning the legislature spent more than
nearly $100 million, right?
Right, and we're going to take, you know, right off the top before, you know, we even start the session, a massive increase. And by the way, 4 weeks prior to this passage of this pay increase bill, the legislature already got a raise of 4.1% based on cost household median income. You know, it's tied. Our salaries are tied, you know, up or down to the median household income. Mm. We actually got a 4.1 increase, and then they tacked on what in some cases can be a 45% increase in salaries. So a lot of money. I'm not sure how they justified it, but there was also one other element to it that I think is a real problem, not just the economics, but the fact of the matter is now a committee chair who was making sometimes $15,000 as a bonus to be a committee chair is getting sometimes $30,000 to be a committee chair. And by doing that across the board with a lot of positions, it basically buys the loyalty so that the Speaker pretty much owns the votes of the majority of the chamber. And so there's really going to be very little dissension at this point because people want to be in line to get that vice chair paid position and that chairman's paid position. So as Jonathan Hecht from Watertown, the rep from Watertown, said on the floor of the House, this really pretty much consolidates power for good in the hands of the Speaker and the Senate President when there really should be a freer hand for debate and questioning how things go up on Beacon Hill.
Kind of a tough way to start off the new legislative session, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, again, out of line with what's been going on economically for people. I don't know anybody who is a retiree who's seen Social Security go up, you know, by 4.1%, let alone 45%, right?
Sure.
So, you know, veterans coming back, looking at, you know, a tough job market. And then on top of that, just average workers, you know, I don't know who's gotten a raise in
cost of living raise,
long.
Right? It's been a while.
Yeah, and then healthcare costs continue to go up. I mean, 25% minimum increases this last year on plans when we were supposed to be trying to go the other way and save $2,500, you know, a year. It's been going the wrong way. So I think the legislature really was tone deaf on this one, giving a raise. And I voted against it. I spoke on the floor against it. And again, I blocked it 2 years ago, I blocked it from happening during informal session. So I've done what I can, but I mean, the fact of the matter is it's now up to, and the governor vetoed it. The governor vetoed it, but it's up to each legislator who's going to get that raise to decide if they're going to keep it or are they going to donate it back. I've already told constituents that, you know, I plan on giving it back in charity to the district, but it's, you know, it's going to be something I don't think people forget come next November, or two Novembers from now.
Governor has put out his budget. Have you had a chance to take a look at it and see if there's going to be any conversation in the House as to what they will put forth for their budget?
Well, I think one of the big things that stands out from the governor's budget this year, it's about a $40.5 billion budget. All right. So and it's an increase over last year, but what we're trying to do is continue to rein in the cost a bit. The problem I see in the budget right now is there's a plan to take $300 million that the state currently pays for in mass health, and they're going to try to shift that on to businesses across the state, and they're going to do what it's going to be a $2,000 penalty if your company doesn't meet a certain threshold for coverage for employees and for how many employees you're covering and at what level they're being covered at. So if you're basically they're going to try to find about $300 million worth of $2,000 fines to transfer costs from the state onto businesses at a time when businesses are already eating the new increases for this year on health care plans, and we're already fighting to try to keep companies in the state. I mean, GE, thankfully, you know, we've recruited them to come to Boston,
right?
But they're not here fully yet, and all the companies that they're going to spawn haven't come here yet. And, you know, we don't want to create any reason, in my opinion right now, to break that delicate balance of not being called Taxachusetts and getting these companies in so we can get more hirees. And yet at the same time, we're about to, you know, basically do a major transfer shift of $300 million cost onto businesses in this budget.
So that's something that bears watching.
I'm gonna be opposed to it. I know it's coming out of the governor's office, but I'm going to be opposed to it.
Got a couple of moments left here with you. Want to take a moment to talk about, you actually had a chance to be down in Washington, D.C. to see the inauguration, attend a ball or two.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, my wife and I have never been to one before. I had a great chance to bring her. It was exciting. Congressman Lynch actually helped upgrade my seats to some really nice ones.
Wow.
So a lot of great stuff even before I got down there. I got there late on a Thursday evening, and then really basically got enough rest for the full day of activities. I mean, you have to get up early to get to your seats, then to get to some events afterwards as a parade, then grab something to eat, then get to the hotel to have let your wife change into that ever important ball gown,
right.
and then get off to the balls themselves. So everything hit off just right as far as timing, and it was really great. The Capitol itself was amazing. You're right at the base of the Capitol, you know, huge building, all these people on the sides in special seating, and there's the president and the vice president getting sworn in. You know, they do America the Beautiful, the army cannons are going off. It's just one of those moments that you just say, wow, and you turn around and you see a million people behind you on the lawn. And then going to the Freedom Ball was nice because the Freedom Ball was open to service members to go to, and so you had all branches of the military there. The Marine Band played Hail to the Chief when the president came in. All the major networks that were covering the event were in that ball, so you got to see personalities. Sean Hannity turned around and was just waving and getting the crowd going and stuff like that. Tucker Carlson was there. So, exciting to see those folks, but also great to meet people from across the country, worked on the campaign, or military members that were supportive of the president-elect. And so it was just an incredible day. I will never forget it. And, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
And your wife was also busy because there was something else interfamily going on.
Yes.
In regards to, I think, your daughter who was competing.
Yes. So my wife flew out the next morning to Dallas. I had to stay for some meetings, but my wife flew out to Dallas that morning. My daughter, Kaylee, is a freshman at Whitman-Hanson, made the varsity cheer squad, which, by the way, has won states 5 years going.
Wow.
This year, and they'd won last time they went to Dallas for the Nationals, the Cheer Association of America is what it is. That competition, the team had won third. This time they came in first place, won the entire, thing for their division.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing. So, I'm watching the Patriots. They had two nights of competition, Saturday night and Sunday night. They didn't fly back till Monday, but on Sunday night when the Patriots won against the Texans, like 5 minutes before the game ends, I get a text from my wife, we just won the whole thing, you know. So what a great weekend overall. And for my daughter to be a freshman to experience, you know, winning the national title and cheer was amazing. I mean, for some reason, Massachusetts has a very strong cheer program. We compete with the southern states,
sure.
And they beat, I think it was Oklahoma was the team that they ended up beating to win the national title. So a once-in-a-lifetime experience for her as well.
There you go. Bring it on.
That's it?
Yeah. Folks want to get in touch with you in regards to anything we've talked
about.
They
should call you first. And you can call. No, I'm kidding. Call me.
Deflect them.
Call
screen.
Me. That's right. No, call me at the State House at 617-722-2810. Or you can go to my website, jeffdiehl.com, G-E-O-F-F-D-I-E-H-L. It's got links to Facebook, Twitter, all that, in case you want to see what I'm up to.
Representative, as always.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you for coming in even talking a little bit about the Patriots, even though that we now know you like the Bears.
Well, I also had a relative playing for the Bears, so...
Oh, all right, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that makes things different. Okay. Yeah. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. We're going to step aside for a moment, and when we come back, more program. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Daddy, Daddy, I used that tea kettle to melt the ice off your windshield. Now there's beautiful and pretty crisscrosses and sparkly spiderwebs all over the windshield.
What?
Can we do Mom's too? Can we?
Oh, windshield broken? My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you for keeping that radio dial set to 95.9 WATD. If you happen to miss any of our segments, you catch the tail end. We do our best to make sure that we put those podcasts online so you can be able to check them out. Now, we have done something a little bit different. I used to do it where it's like I would segregate each one, each guest and everything, and I had people go, they get confused. So it's all now, there's a date. Unless it's like special, like last week we had Jerry Thornton and Kerry Byrne and George Kippen, and that was kind of like a 45-minute segment unto itself, and it was such a fun segment. I says, all right, maybe I'll this one time. That's why I did that. So, before we move forward and start our conversation with Mike Mullen, who is here in studio, I'm going to introduce a gentleman who's going to be my co-host from this point forward, my wingman. Mr. Joe Weeks, he's been here before.
Hello, how are you? Thanks
Pretty
for
good.
Having me.
Good. Can you hear yourself in the headphones okay?
I can hear myself perfect, thank
good,
you.
Good, good. And you know Mike Mullen?
Well, very well, yeah. Old friends.
Yeah, he's a Rockland, he was a Rockland resident up until a few years ago.
And then he defected to Hanson.
Yeah. Are we in the Finance Committee?
Finance Committee, yep. That's where I got my chops in the political realm.
Very nice.
And now Mike's a selectman, well-deserved. Absolutely fantastic. Great representation for Rockland, so they're very lucky.
And Mike was an eyelash. He was a whisker away from being the ATA in Whitman.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The assistant town administrator.
Last year, yeah, last fall.
Yeah, really?
So.
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
yeah,
great.
So,
it was right there. He was part of the conversation. He was right there.
That's great. Well deserved, too.
Whitman has a lot of great things happening, too, and the people there are great. And, you know, coming from a small town, too, like Rockland, I mean, you just intrinsically, you know, and I almost get it, like, even though I lived right down the road, and it was a great process to have gone through, and, you know, wish everything, continued progress over there, so.
So the idea of having Mike in this evening, who is a Rockland selectman, is an event that they got going on as a 40R conversation. A little bit about the downtown revitalization, well, the downtown Rockland, the revitalization overlay district. This is taking place this Thursday night, Rockland Senior Center, 317 Plain Street, 7 p.m. And what was the idea of putting this event together?
I think there was actually, over the past year or so, and even probably more, there's been a bunch of things ongoing, actually a really positive movement in a bunch of areas. And I think There's always been like a really, really strong push to, you know, to really move the ball forward in downtown Rockland. But I think as of late, one of the most recent things that has really come up that has created a lot of energy for a potential 40-hour district has been the actually work of the Housing Partnership Committee in Rockland. Over the summer and in the fall, the Housing Production Committee, led by Larry Ryan on the Board of Selectmen, really worked with the state, worked with the town and its residents to come up with a way to address the housing challenges facing Rockland, and also to determine like a realistic way to meet the 10% affordable housing threshold required by the state. And as a result of that, one of the recommendations was, you know, for the town and for town meeting to consider a 40-hour district, but also
a bylaw, maybe putting a bylaw in place.
Yeah, like in. Like a smart growth overlay district.
Okay.
They have those in Bridgewater and Norwood and a whole bunch of communities. But also, as I mentioned, number one, to address the housing needs, the housing and challenges. But also, with everything happening, it just makes sense to really have energy, to really have a lot of movement and opportunity in downtown Rockland on Union Street.
Now, I want to kind of throw this to Joe, because I believe in the town of Hanson. Do you not serve on the planning board?
I am the chair of the planning board committee.
Look at that.
He's like a jack of all trades.
See how? See how? Do you see? Do you see?
You bring people together, Kevin.
But you see your purpose now, right?
I see my purpose, yes.
So, so to keep the conversation going here, you wanted to kind of.
Well, I wanted to ask, you know, Chapter 40R is a great opportunity for a lot of towns. And I'm just curious, for those that are listening, they may want to attend something like this. What is a Chapter 40R? What exactly are we talking about?
Good question.
Yeah, like the Chapter 40R is, Chapter 40R was passed by the legislature in 2004, I believe. And really what it does is it's an incentive actually program by the state to encourage smart growth overlay districts and hubs around downtowns and hubs around transportation centers to really, again, help meet the housing needs facing communities in the Commonwealth, but also as a way to include retail in that to really and, you know, build a critical mass in areas where the housing can be complemented by restaurants, dry cleaners, bakeries, and cafes and bookshops, and hopefully that's what I envision for downtown anyways, downtown Rockland anyways. You know, you drive down Union Street, and it's a street, it's an area with a whole bunch of history, and there's a lot of people in town, like every town, who want to bring Union Street back to its heyday, and in many ways, unfortunately, I don't think it's realistic, or possible, like in many ways, but through opportunities like this to really, to create some energy there, to attract actually really, really good developers and have the critical mass of people there, I think is huge. So many people, and I hear this all the time, when they're in Rockland or they do business in Rockland, a lot of people have this weird misperception that a whole lot is happening in town. And in reality, there really is. You look at the Hingham Street corridor right now, down by Home Depot. That area, that street, like, is being developed like crazy. We have like a new Hyundai dealership with down there. We have all the growth that's going to continue happening, hopefully because of Union Point and all that. A development in the zoning that was passed by a town meeting last year. But, you know, so many people, they measure progress in a community by what's happening in the downtown. That's where the heart, that's where the center of the community is. And if we're able to hopefully really pick up on the momentum that exists right now in terms of these opportunities, in terms of the potential for development, then I think it's a win-win for the town economically, for the people, and it's exciting.
Again, we're speaking with Mike Mullen. He's a Rockland selectman. He had to kind of talk a little bit about a workshop that's going to be taking place this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Rockland Senior Center, 317 Plain Street. The idea is to discuss 40R zoning, possible bylaw, ways to revitalize and make the downtown area of Rockland walkable. And it seems a lot of communities, I think of the city of Brockton, doing whatever they can to try to redevelop the downtown corridor and try to get as much foot traffic as possible, whether it's an educational component, whether it's, you know, having a mixed use an overlay district such as this. What are some of the things? What are some of the things that you're considering that maybe other communities have had success with that may be part of this conversation?
Looking at what our communities like Brockton,
Lowell. I know Lowell has been successful.
Lowell's done it too. Like Norwood, we actually in October had a presentation where we actually brought our city, actually town officials. From the town of Framingham. It's actually, I think, the biggest town in the Commonwealth that should be a city. It's crazy. But anyways, that's a whole other story. But local officials from Framingham came to Rockland, and they talked about, you know, what they've been doing. And and they brought, a presentation. They brought pictures. And, I was actually, sitting our next to, Joe Moschino and from Hingham.
State representative.
Exactly. I was talking with her. We were talking about the challenges in Hull and in Hingham and in Rockland. I said, oh my God, you look at those pictures right now. That's Rockland. The bones of the buildings are amazing. And they have so much opportunity, so much potential. And, so Framingham's a perfect example. And actually in the next few months or so, I want to get out to Framingham and, to really see and experience what they've been able to do and hopefully replicate that and bring that model to Rockland. I mean, we have all the pieces. We have the buildings. We have the town, the town charm, the town pride, the people. And, and we have all the pieces of the puzzle. We just need to make sure we're planning and going forward in the right way with our residents.
Yeah, it seems like you have, like you said, you have the right bones there. I remember when I was in Rockland years ago, and they just started to develop the downtown. And since that time, you guys have done a fantastic job of really bringing back the character and making sure that it is more business friendly, more business savvy. You can have people walking around there. I know that was a big issue back then. But even doing simple things like planting trees and working on the sidewalks, things along those lines, you guys did a lot of good things with those, and you did a good job bringing that back. What are you looking for people to do? Are you looking for people to really look at this and say, this is something I want? Are you looking for them to stay away from it? What are you looking for them in the 40R?
Really, we want to hear from people, especially on Thursday night. You mentioned the planters and the trees that have been a huge hit in downtown, and that was actually all that work, that initiative, was actually led by one of our residents, Pat Foley, and who's just amazing. She's actually on the 40R committee with us.
Great.
And she lives actually right off of Union Street. And that's really my point here. Is with any type of a change, with any potential, there's always the opportunity and rightfully for concern. And so what we're hoping for on Thursday night, we really want the townspeople to come out, especially those townspeople who live in the neighborhoods off Union Street. So we have the opportunity to actually have dialogue, to explain what this actually means, what this looks like. And the other part, the committee over the past 3 months or so, we've been actually extremely methodical and going through properties, going through Union Street, and really picking and choosing exactly where we're gonna or where we hope to create the overlay district, because the neighborhoods right off Union Street, they too have a charm, they have a character, they have a long-standing single-family home residence, and we don't want to disrupt that. But again, we want to, respect all that, and really appreciate that. At the same time, really make sure we're like on Union Street proper itself, making sure we're taking advantages of the opportunities that, you know, are provided to us in our community right now.
And it sounds great. I mean, trying to get the local residents to be invested in their community is fantastic. It's a great idea to open up forums like this. As I'm listening to you talk about this, though, I'm wondering, for Rockland residents that may want to come to something like this, you're talking a lot about overlay districts. Can you explain what that is a little bit so that people might be able to be more informed on that?
Yeah, like every area, like at least like in Rockland right now, has a zoning, like it's part of like a zoning ordinance, and you know, like it might be in Rockland like an R1 or like an R2 or R3 or 4, or like it might be in an industrial, a commercial zone, and basically what like a smart growth overlay district does, like is it takes the existing like zoning ordinance and basically right on top of it creates like this like overarching district that actually is still like is required to follow you know, the laws and the ordinance of the like of the original like zoning area, and but to really, and yet to make sure like we're really maximizing it and like giving it really more opportunities. So basically the smart growth overlay district will have to fit like in the existing district, but like again, it just really just provides a little bit more of enhanced opportunities to, you know, to be able to develop it, to bring housing, to address our housing needs, and to hopefully like bring in retail components and commercial components as well. And you know, that all helps a tax base and revenues for the town, so we don't
absolutely
have to keep going back.
And most people are not necessarily those who would listen and be able to absorb and take all this in. Is there something that's in black and white, or something that somebody can access on the town website to kind of give a rundown as to this this meeting coming up on Thursday?
Yes, and I know that's a perfect question, Kev. So, like, if you go, if residents want to go to the Town of Rockland website, the website is www.rockland
-ma.gov. Yep.
Rockland-ma.gov. I mean, there's like a link right on the homepage to all this information. And I'm sure once we hear feedback, once we hear, you know, like responses from neighbors, from residents on Thursday night, will be able to like respond and provide some additional information as well. So the site itself will be updated between now and the town meeting, like in the first part of May. That's when like we're hoping to have this all take place. So,
well, Mike, I want to thank you very much, and I want to thank you for reaching out. Mike actually reached out to me. He's like, Kev, get any time on the Monday night? I'm like, for you, Mike.
Well, thanks.
$49.50.
It's great to know people, isn't it? Unbelievable.
Plus taxes.
So what'd Jeff Teal get? And he probably got the cheaper rate. I don't know. I don't want to go into that. He's talking about a million people in crowds, and I'm like, oh, God. Did that really happen?
With that?
But anyhow.
That's right. I love it. It was great seeing you, Mike.
It was really definitely great seeing you.
And you too, Joe. Thanks.
Nice I was able to connect to Rockland, guys.
You know, all roads lead back.
That's right. It happens on Monday Night Talk exclusively.
That's right.
We're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to talk a little antiques here with Peter Smith from WATD's Antique Air Show that you can hear every Saturday morning right here at 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
Welcome to the second hour of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And that was a good conversation with Mike.
He knows his stuff.
He knows his stuff. And you know what's fun? Is the next guy who's sitting right here next to us. Of course, on radio, folks can't see, but on your radio dial from left to right, Pete is here. His name is Peter Smith. Is it 10 a.m.?
10 a.m. Saturday mornings.
Saturday morning is the Antique Air Show. Peter is a nationally certified personal property appraiser, broker, consultant, and dealer.
And sometimes counselor, I think, with certain situations.
How many weeks into the show are you?
I did my fifth show this past Saturday.
Look at you.
Yeah. Congratulations. I got a call from Ed Perry, the owner of the station, the other day. And I guess he's getting some pretty good reviews. And he's going to run it again during the week. It's going to be running on Tuesday nights from 7 to 8 o'clock.
Hot bananas.
That's great.
I know. That made me feel
pretty impressive.
Good.
We've got a void to fill there. Right. And you know, I love local artists, but if we can hear a little bit about antiques and folks calling and wanting to discuss antiques. Now, you are the current owner of the Plymouth Exchange.
Yes.
What's some of the things that folks want to come on down to the exchange? What's some of the things that folks would want to come down? I would think it's a matter if you have things to sell, buy, right?
I describe it this way. I've been in the antiques business for so long. I owned the Sandwich Antique Center for the last 20 years.
Yep.
And that was a really good, dedicated, antiques-only kind of store. So pretty successful place. But I was always in situations where I'd go into a house, and it's a house full of things, and I would be able to deal with the antiques and then have to refer to somebody else for the balance. And so I was leaving behind so many, good things that were of interest but not antique. So made me open the Plymouth Exchange, and the idea behind it was to be able to have a venue where I could sell things that were of very good quality, of interest, and not necessarily antique. And that was 6 years ago. And it's gone so well that after 20 years, I actually sold the Antique Center last year, and I'm focusing on the exchange.
Wow.
So anything that you might find in a house that is of quality, of interest, if you walked in the store, you'd see, who knows what you'd see. I mean, you might see an old motorcycle and a pool table, along with a bunch of good art and good antique furniture. And as my sign says, the Plymouth Exchange, objects of interest.
One of the things that's always piqued my interest, and I've always liked this idea of antiques, is the eye. How do you know what's good, what's not? How do you really hone that skill in?
How does it
really
pass the smell test? That's
a great question, because there's a lot of people that have gotten into the antiques business because of their interest in antiques, and there's a lot of people that develop a good knowledge of antiques. They read about it, so they're well schooled. Mm-hmm. They know everything about antiques except how to make money, and right. A lot of that's to do with knowing what to buy, being able to take things for sale that are, I don't want to say outside of your comfort zone, but maybe things that you don't personally have interest in. So you have to have eyes wide open,
right,
in terms of understanding that there's somebody out there to collect just about everything, and understand what things are worth. And having the Antique Center for so many years, we had 110 dealers in there that we represented and we rented space to. So you get to see just about everything in terms of what people are looking for and what sells. So you learn a ton that you wouldn't otherwise learn without having that going on around you. And in the old days, I used to go to auctions every night, and then the house calls of really what I do now. I do a lot of consulting and liquidating of estates and that kind of thing. I get a lot of calls from lawyers where I have to go in there and decide what goes where, but to answer your question, but it really is the eye. Intuition and a creative eye will make you a more successful person in this business than just straight book knowledge.
Right. And how can you tell what is good versus what the person likes? In terms of, if I go and buy something, I buy a piece of furniture, and it may be something I personally like, but how do you know if it's actually worth something in terms of being an antique? How do you know if it's actually sellable, if it's something worthwhile to someone like you?
It comes from a particular period, right?
Yeah.
Well, the periods, you said a good word. So take 18th century federal style furniture that pretty much got underway around 1775, but they never stopped making it. so they still make it.
Right.
You know, you see things like on the Antiques Roadshow, some card table sells for $20,000 or they estimate at $20,000, and my phone rings the next day, and I got one just like it. You know, just go look. It's 100 years newer, but it's, you know, like, right. but they don't know that. So there's a lot of general sort of foundation type knowledge to being able to understand furniture. Furniture and art are really kind of my specialties. But one thing I've learned over and over again, and that's part of what I love so much about my job, is I'm always coming across things I've never seen before. Mm. So it's and it happens daily. You know, you come across something that you don't know the answer to. Which keeps the job exciting. So right. You can often intuit what you think, or you get a feeling for something, right. and run with that.
That's great.
How often do you find yourself watching TV? I mean, you got shows like American Pickers, where they, you know, they're in somebody's barn and they're looking at stuff, and and you find yourself going ooh and seeing stuff on TV and having industry knowledge of certain items and seeing what they do, how they go about the art of bartering.
I'm going to crash burst a bubble out there, but I've been on those shows. I've been the on-screen guy. And, boy, I guess I can say this because I never had to sign anything. But first of all, they're fake for the most part. I mean, right. I did one show where they found all these things in a container that was all very exciting, and we did this big thing out in Plymouth Bay. But I provided the things that they found. Oh, so, you know, it's Hollywood.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. That makes noise and that picks things up. Well, because I want people to hear what you have to say. He's spinning a bottle. And it's funny you mention that, because I was having a conversation at the start of the show with Jeff Deal. And is it a local elected official?
I was about to bring that up.
Yeah, don't mention names.
No, it's all right.
Just to protect the innocent. But they went out and they were going to sell something. And it's the whole thing. You're correct that it's stuff is staged. What you see on TV isn't necessarily what's actually happened. People aren't walking into a pawn shop and going, "I've got this." And
the Declaration of Independence.
I'm going to make a phone call. Right. Yeah, I'm going to make a phone call, and then you know, a segment later, here's you know. Said expert who was going to look at it and go, well, you know, it's pretty close, but, and, you know, and then they go into it, and then comes whether it's the bad news, that it's something that's not necessarily authentic, or it's beyond damage, so it kind of brings down its value, and then the bartering begins. But the whole idea is that it's not necessarily in the pawn shop, but there's a warehouse out behind that establishment, that there is another pawn shop. I'm doing air quotes here, like on TV.
I think these shows start off, you know, legitimately. And
of course
there's guys that are out there that are doing these container auctions, and they do find things. But you know, Hollywood gets involved, and got to keep the ratings up. Got to keep the show going.
Well, there's been lawsuits. Look at Storage Wars.
That's right.
Right.
Perfect example.
Right.
Yeah. So to keep the people watching and to keep the show exciting, they start fabricating items, they don't make any claim that what they're doing is entirely truthful. So,
do you ever watch those shows and just know that what they're doing isn't exactly correct? Do you think that their valuations for these things are just way off kilter? They're doing it more for entertainment than anything else?
Well, sensationalism.
I would say, I'd answer the question this way. You watch something like the Antiques Roadshow, and, you know, those guys are dead on. Those guys are the cream as far as the appraisers out there go, and I know most all of them, and they're appraising things accurately. But when it comes to figures, a lot of appraisers tend to want to make their customer happy. So, you know, if you look at the insurance value is some theoretical figure that something will never sell for, you see a lot of that. So it's a lot of high numbers that aren't realistic as far as what the market would actually you know, demonstrate for a sale of something like that. I was watching a roadshow just a couple of weeks ago, and they had, again, I'll say Federal Card Table. And you know, they're doing the new show where they go back in time, and what's the value now?
Right.
This poor dealer, this guy I know, he's looking at this card table, and it's, oh, what's a beauty. It's worth at least $20,000, and the best thing about this is it's never going to go down in value. Then the next scene is down by half.
Could imagine.
15 years later.
Yeah. Wow.
Some of your information says that you yourself, and you actually mentioned it earlier, that you've been tabbed to be an expert on national TV. What have been your times in front of the camera that you've had a chance to provide your expertise?
The one that got the most attention was actually the one I spoke of. We did a feature on a whale gun, and there was 35 guys out here from Hollywood. They rented a bunch of boats, and we're out there in Plymouth Harbor, and the whole idea was to demonstrate this whale gun. So a great friend of mine, Dan Colletti, who's likes to blow things up.
You'll have that friend.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he's actually a licensed cannoneer. He's an explosive expert. He's a fireworks guy, and he's I think considered to be the best gunsmith in the world.
Okay. Wow.
Anyway, so here Dan and I were down in Scorton Creek on the Cape the night before the show, practicing blowing up watermelons. So he'd be putting the right amount of TNT and they were blowing up watermelons. So we had this fake scene where we're shooting the gun in slow motion, and then the camera, you know, veers over to where the watermelon is, and the watermelon blows up. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah, but the amount of effort and energy that they put in, 35 people on three boats to do this. And, you know, around 10:30, some guy comes out and asks you what you want for lunch, and you're out on the middle of the bay, right?
Right.
Well, what do you mean, what do you want? What do you want? We're going to go get it for you.
Wow.
You know, 2 hours later, this boat comes with whatever anybody ordered, and it's very Hollywood.
I have some just random questions for you. Just because I'm curious, what is the kind of the wackiest thing you've ever appraised? What's the...
Damn you, Joe, you stole my question.
Oh, there we go. We think alike.
That's a great question. Please continue.
Well, I hopefully these are other good questions. Otherwise, I'll let you down. I don't want to do that. What is the most expensive thing that you've ever appraised in terms of the expectation was low and then it ended up being something pretty rare?
Good question.
And then the reverse of that. What was expected to be really high and then ended up being really low?
Well, let me answer the...
It's like a three-part question.
At least three parts.
Yeah,
easily.
It's actually three questions. I'm going to remember all three here.
Yeah.
We had one just a couple of weeks ago. We did a big appraisal event at the Exchange to benefit the Plymouth Philharmonic. So I brought in you know, eight or nine of the best appraisers around, and we did this thing. We did about 240 appraisals that day, and this lady walked in with this silver bowl with enamel all over it. It was a good-looking thing.
Yeah.
And one of the appraisers there, Stephen Fletcher from Skinner, is probably... one of these guys you see on the roadshow all the time, went up to his table and he took it in. And the story was that it was a Russian-made piece of silver that the president of Mexico had gifted to this lady's father or grandfather, maybe, who was the governor of New Hampshire. Now, she, you know, it's the kind of thing that you know, probably could have bought it for $500 for me as a nice chunk of silver and an interesting thing. Well, it sold 5 days ago at Skinner for $40,000.
Wow.
Nice.
Yes.
Pretty impressive.
Yes.
Not bad for a day's work.
And a very happy woman, too.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah. And the Philharmonic will get a little chunk of that, too. So it's a win-win.
Can't lose with that.
Yeah.
What's the wackiest thing you've ever appraised?
Lots and lots of wacky. And wacky sells. I'm always, like I said, I things I've never seen before.
Just so you know, the word isn't wacky. It's unique.
Interesting. Unusual. Bizarre, even.
What's the most unique thing that you've ever...
One of the things that I took in, I was at the printer in Hyannis had gone out of business. It had been there since about 1870. And I took in this super cool-looking floor-standing printer. It's about almost 5 feet high, you know, 2 feet square, gears and sprockets and stuff. Yeah. And just to me, it looked like art.
Yeah.
But it weighed literally 1,200 pounds or more. And I just had to have it. I mean, anybody in my business would have looked at that and just walked away from it, but I had to have it.
That's great.
So it took five of us to get it on the truck. We got it off the truck, into the Exchange, but just inside the doors as far as we were going to get it, because there's three little stairs that would go up. And it sat there for a little while, and everybody looked at it. Well, that's an interesting thing, but nobody's going to buy that and stick it in their living room. But so I ended up putting that for sale online. Mm. And Hollywood bought it.
That's great.
We ended up shipping it to Calgary, Alberta for the set of one of the Fast and Furious movies.
There's something for everyone.
There is, and that's what I constantly telling people is that, you know, I go into their house to look at somebody's china or, you know, the typical antiques, and let's say somebody's passed away, and as often as not, it is the things that are maybe on their way to the dump or that they had no idea of, that can so often be where the value is.
Yeah.
Happens so regularly that people have no idea what they're hanging on to. So I always tell people to be very careful what you throw away.
That's right.
And I think your third question, Joe, mm-hmm. if I may jump in here, was...
You steal my question.
Somebody, no. I'm just reiterating your question. And I don't know if you answered it or not. And that is a particular person might have came in with a high expectation of something, but yet you had to find a way to let them down and go, not much.
Well, that's kind of become every day these days. I feel my job has been disappointing people.
Yeah.
the business has changed so radically. Your classic collectibles, for example, the little figurines and that kind of thing are down by 85% from what they were 20 years ago. That card table I mentioned before, down by 60%.
Right.
So the antiques business has just taken an absolute beating. And people have ideas in their heads, you know, their grandmother's china that's been passed down to them. I mean, we just leave that behind in the house. We don't even bother with it because it's essentially worthless.
Right.
So the expectations and then trying to be polite. I was in a house. This lady had this very important collection. She wouldn't tell me what it was, but of course it was going to be worth my while to go to her house. So I go in there, and she's got her living room lined with these like curio cabinets and packed full of figurines. Mm-hmm. And each one has its own security lock on it. She's got special lighting installed to shine on them in certain ways. And this lady had this giant Hummel collection.
Ooh.
Yeah, we'll talk about those in a minute. So I took a quick walk around to see if there's anything else beside Hummels, and I said, I'm sorry, ma'am, but you know, there's no market for your Hummels, and Hummels is the only rule I've ever had in this business. I've never actually officially owned or done business or brokered or anything to do with a Hummel. Yeah. I'd leave them behind. But so I said to the lady, I said, I can't help you with your Hummels, but I'd be happy to sell the cabinets for you.
There you go.
Pretty much chased me out of the house.
Wow. I can imagine.
And for those who don't know, so the Hummels were like a type of figurine.
Hummels were made in the 30s in Germany, and they're super cutesy, hand-painted porcelain figurines. You know, the little girl holding her doll, and for whatever reason, it's some psychological issue on my side. I just can't stand them, and it's become a point of pride for me now that I've never ever actually owned a Hummel. Until a friend of mine, knowing this, gifted me one in a shoebox.
I was just going to say that.
Right.
It might be a perfect gift for Peter Smith if you're
exactly.
friends
with him. But with the Hummel was a hammer.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That's very cathartic.
If good word. Listen to the show on Saturday mornings, and that's actually...
10 a.m.
That's my theme, is I've been the 50 ways to kill a Hummel.
I like that.
We've been crushing Hummels, and you know,
sounds like a TV show in the making.
There's been some good feedback on the show, but there's been a little bit of not so good, and people are disturbed at my Hummel destruction. But I tell you, it just feels so good.
I can imagine.
I have to say, you might end up being a candidate for our next guest. He actually has 9 signs that it might be time to see a therapist. Dr. John
smashing Hummel on a radio show.
You gotta hear the show. You gotta hear the sound they make. With the first one we did, we dropped a 5-pound cannonball from on high onto it.
Oh, that just sounds fun.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
and I just get this like tingly warm feeling afterwards, and so I'm just not going to stop.
Well, you got to start a YouTube channel for this, I think.
Might have to.
My theory is for every Hummel that I crush, yours is worth just a little bit more.
Of course, we're speaking with Peter Smith, the host of the Antique Air Show, that's heard here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and soon. Going to be on the station on
Tuesday evening, 7 to 8 o'clock, starting
just before John Shea's Almost Famous program. So that's fantastic. You talk about what's not hot. What are some of the things that seem to be hot these days? And is there a shelf life for those things that are hot? How quickly do you see things that are really popular and then they kind of wane?
Great question. The industry, it's always been this way, I think. When it comes to material possessions, there's a constant shift in what's hot, what's interesting, what's fashionable, and of course what people are buying. So everything went through a big downturn after 08. But before that, interest in antiques had started to wane a little bit anyway, and people were becoming more interested in mid-century look, you know, modern lines, paint. So the shift was already underway. Then the recession hit, and things just tumbled. So when somebody asked me that question of what's selling, it's become a very difficult question to answer because it's a little bit of everything. People are decorating differently. They're decorating, you know, in a very eclectic way. Some things have made a pretty good comeback, like in the furniture world, classic early primitive cupboards and early handmade things and you know, painted trunks and that kind of thing are coming back into fashion. Whereas the shiny formal 18th century style federal furniture has not. It's still way off. So there's a constant shift in that pendulum as to what's hot and what's not. And sometimes, you know, it can be very short lived how long something sticks around for, but it's always changing.
Have you noticed you've been in the business for 20 years.
30.
Yeah, 30 years. Have you noticed a generational shift? It kind of segues into what Kevin was just asking, but have you noticed a general shift in what people are buying in terms of the generation itself? That
well, I think of what you're getting at, you know, I often hear, you know, my kids don't want it. You know, kids these days, they have no idea, they have no taste, they have no, you know, and my theory is that they've been saying that for 1,000 years. I think that antiques and becoming interested in craftsmanship and objects of art is something that you mature to. Mm, right. So I think this generation is as promising, or maybe more than ours is or was. And so I don't really believe in that you know, blaming the current generation for having no taste. I think it's almost the opposite.
Well, what I'm thinking about is going back to the Hummels type of thing. Hummels were a little bit older in probably a previous generation. Now you get things,
and there was
like
an appreciation for it at that time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you move into a generation in which I remember in my childhood. You had things like Beanie Babies and Garbage Pail Kids.
I was
and stuff
just thinking
like that
too. Yeah,
and that's what I mean by the generational shift. I mean, are you seeing people like not going towards those things, but going towards the more stuff from the younger generation that kind of brings back that
nostalgia?
Yeah, the nostalgia. Exactly.
Well, people, I think, look as they get older, they look to buy maybe the things that was around their house when they were kids.
Yeah.
Which explains why the mid-century furniture look really, really took off about 10 right. or 12 years ago and is still going. But yeah, there's always a shift. But younger people don't tend to be much of collectors generally.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're buying something specific that is in my world, at least, as far as collectibles or art or antiques. But they graduate into it as they get older.
Right.
Yeah, we all become pack rats somehow, some way. We all do. We really do. We collect stuff, and you know, whether we end up using it or we just collect it because someday we may need it.
Well, that's my best customer. I got lots of hoarder stories.
Absolutely, and we'll get to one of those in just a moment. I wanted to kind of, I mean, you've kind of gotten into. Sounds like you got into this business just in the infancy of cable TV. And with the onset of cable TV, we've seen a lot of shows like HGTV, with people going and they're fixing up homes. How have, you know, programs like HGTV been of a help to the antiques industry and even maybe a help to you as well?
Well, I think that a lot of those shows have replaced magazines. Used to be, you know, a lot of people would subscribe to half a dozen magazines.
Yep.
And now they just watch TV to get their ideas, or websites like How to
Homes
Online
and Garden and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so they're poking around online and they're seeing images and they're watching those shows and that's how they're getting their ideas. So people are, I think, more informed. I think they're more interesting. I think the things that people collect is a much wider variety. You know, my father's generation, you either collected stamps or coins.
Oh yeah.
Right.
That's absolutely.
And the girls would collect dolls and learn to play the piano. I mean, that's just how you were brought up. And so I think it's a much broader base of interest in interesting things.
I guess I would ask you, what's new at the exchange?
Well, every day there's stuff coming in there. We got in this tremendous collection of stringed instruments. A guy who used to play with Earl Scruggs, who was considered the granddaddy of bluegrass.
Right.
And this same band member has played with all the greats throughout the world, really. But he's an American, but he wants to remain anonymous, unfortunately. But he's an old guy now. He brought us all his instruments, so we've got just some incredible things. We have a banjo made by Frank Neat. There was Scruggs's house. There was a stage out back, outdoors, and there was a big walnut tree in front of the stage, and I guess anybody who was everybody ever played in his backyard on that stage. And the way I he spoke to me about it is that tree was there for, you know, 40 years absorbing those vibrations of those guys on stage, and almost all the greats were there. So he pictures big walnut trees down in Tennessee, and, you know, you're sitting around listening to bluegrass. Well, that walnut tree came down a number of years ago, and they made 30 banjos out of this black walnut.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, and we got number 3 of 30 of those banjos.
Not too bad.
Signed by Earl Scruggs. So we got that and just probably a dozen really good stringed instruments that just came in. Yeah.
Well, if you're lucky, I find myself to be pretty lucky because I've been trying to teach myself the guitar for the past 15 years, so I might happen to come down there and check that out. That's pretty interesting.
They're just beautiful really to look at. I just right. like having them in our store.
You know, right.
They're just pretty. And we got a nice Kentucky rifle in the other day. We got a lot of good furniture that's come in. It's a pretty quick moving story. Come in one week and it'll look different a week later.
Somebody wants to get in touch with you outside of calling into your radio show, which I would think that you would encourage folks to call in Saturdays starting at 10 a.m.
Yeah, the show's about people want advice, they have a question, they want answered, but anybody who is interested in finding the best way in which to turn your object or objects into
have it
money.
Assessed.
Yeah, and understand that it's, you know, I do a lot of estate work where I have to do the entire house. So a percentage of things go into the exchange, but my job is getting the most back for, well, so often it's with dealing with lawyers, but getting the most back for the customer. So things go to the exchange, things go to auction, things go online, things go where they need to go to get the best return.
If they want to get in touch with you at the exchange to find out more?
Number of ways, yeah. The PlymouthExchange.com website. They can go there and contact us through that. As a matter of fact, that's a good place to go if you want to send us pictures of anything that you might want to have us look at, or even if you're just curious about something and are looking for a quick, rough appraisal, I'm happy to do that as well. So it's thePlymouthExchange.com. You can do the same thing through our Facebook, or you can call the store at 774-283-4697.
Want to tease this Saturday show? You got anything in the works for Saturday?
I have got my friend Josh, who's J. James Auctioneers, is coming on with. He's kind of sort of been my color commentator lately, and my co-conspirator when it comes to the Hummels. And I'm going to tell you this: I actually bought an antique miniature guillotine the other day. I'm going to test that out. See how that
Ooh,
works.
There you go.
But anyways, I got a guy named Henry Callan who's one of the most interesting and most famous appraisers in New England coming on next week. He's been doing it his whole life. He doesn't even own a computer.
Really?
Doesn't Google, but yet I've never seen him making a mistake with an appraisal. He's
That's
amazing.
That's talent right
that
there.
Is, that
amazing.
Is definitely talent.
Yes.
Well, Peter, we want to thank you for coming in, being a guest.
Well, thank you.
And giving us an opportunity to cross-promote your program and talk about what it is that you do, you specialize in. I thought it was interesting. That's why I approached you. And again, I ask you folks to check them out on Saturday mornings, the Antique Air Show, starting at 10 o'clock. Where you can call in and ask questions, and if you want to find out more in regards to his place, thePlymouthExchange.com. That's the website.
And it's 44 Main Street, Plymouth.
In Plymouth. So, Peter, thank you so much.
All right, boys.
Thank you very much. I could talk about this all day.
Yeah, me too.
And you are listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. And when we come back, we're gonna find out if either me or Joe might need to see... Seek some help, professional help, here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
WATD help you celebrate Valentine's Day with our Roses Are Red contest. Listen to 95.9 WATD all this week. And if you can complete the Roses Are Red Valentine's poem that you might hear, you can win wonderful romantic prizes from our sponsors like Bradford's Package Store, Plymouth Plantation, and the Inn at Scituate Harbor. Remember, Roses Are Red all this week on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to what could be the final segment. We get it's kind of a split type of thing, Joe.
Right.
Yep. We'll start off talking a little bit about if we might need to see a therapist. That'll be the first part of the segment, and then we're going to kind of delve in. I wanted to close out the program talking a little bit about what took place last night.
Yeah, these might be the questions that you don't want the answer to. Was basically what we're going into now.
But so our guest that will close out the show will be WATD's Brendan Conley, who is in our sports department. We'll get his take on last night's game.
Fantastic.
But we're going to start things out, and Doctor, I just want to make sure that I'm saying your name correctly. Is it Cuber or Huba?
Cuber.
Cuber. Am I saying? Okay. Well, my name is Kevin Tachi, and I have Joe Weeks. He is my my co-host.
Hello. How are you?
Good. I'm doing wonderful tonight.
Well, and here's the thing is, I'm sure you're aware, I think the Super Bowl was held down in your area. You're down in Austin, Texas, right?
Yes.
And the Super Bowl just took place down in Texas. And so I think part of our conversation might have to kind of delve into those whose football team was not successful, if they might be candidates to see a therapist.
Well, I think they are. I mean, if you look at the history, they actually did a study of, let me think, it was the Raiders in 83 or 84, the year they lost.
Oh, yeah.
And there was... Over the next 2 weeks, there was between a 3 and a 5 time increase in the number of heart attacks that happened.
No kidding.
In L.A. the 2 weeks following.
If you will, Doctor, help us dispel the myth of that it's not a bad thing to see a therapist and sit down and talk with somebody.
Exactly. I mean, think about having that confidant that you can go and bounce things off of them. Hey, am I making the right choice? Am I actually doing good here, or am I confused about something? Yeah, doesn't mean you're mentally ill.
It says here that you're a clinical forensic psychologist, and my personal background, I'm a licensed mental health counselor by profession during the day. I'm wondering if you can let everybody know what exactly is forensic psychology.
Well, forensic means pertaining to the law, so a large portion of what I do are, for example, competency hearings. You know, you go in and do an evaluation and you come back and report to the judge. I do child custody evaluations. We do a lot of evaluations for probation and parole boards in local areas here, and make recommendations if maybe the person would be better served going to a drug rehab as opposed to being let out, that kind of stuff.
Very nice.
So what, you know, I had a chance, Ryan McCormick is a PR firm that I usually tap in. I talked to Ryan, and I saw this was very interesting as far as 9 signs that it's time to see a therapist. What made you generate this list?
Well, you know, there's just, first of all, I have a nonprofit called Mainstream Mental Health. We're trying to destigmatize mental health.
Right.
And that was one of the reasons. I mean, you know, why should somebody go see a therapist? And a lot of times we don't know. And the other side of that is we're taught to be tough and stick it out and deal with things on your own. And that's not always the best thing to do. So I felt this was appropriate.
Yeah, that sounds like my generation. My generation was to stick it out and be able to, you know, tough it out, you know, rub a little dirt on it, you know.
Yeah, suck it up. Exactly.
Suck it up. But I kind of live and die by that. I am like that, where almost to a fault, especially when it comes to my health. I mean, I have to be, you know, dragging, or, you know, I got to be where I'm bedridden before I'm like going, okay, maybe I will go see a doctor.
Right.
Well, do you go see a dentist? Get your teeth cleaned twice a year?
I do.
Well, why wouldn't you go see a therapist? just touch base.
That's true. What do you, from your experience, what do you think the biggest hurdle is to get people into the office, to get people to actually seek out assistance?
Mm.
Well, once they seek it out, it's not a problem usually. Mm. You know, they're looking for you, and they've already worked it out with themselves. But myself, in my practice, I also provide services to two hospitals, and they're not mental health hospitals. And the doctors say, hey, this guy is depressed, or this guy's got high anxiety, and he's, you know, we're going to have to amputate his leg. Can you go talk to him? And I walk in, and the doctors never tell them that they wrote a referral for a psychologist to come talk to them. And I get this, I'm not crazy.
Right.
Why are you here?
Yeah, we see that a lot. I've seen that a lot myself, so I can fully appreciate that.
Well, I think I like the analogy as to, you know, as far as the dentist. If you go see the dentist twice a year,
right?
Yeah, if you're somebody who likes having nice white teeth and make sure you don't have cavities, then why not do the same when it comes to your mental health?
Exactly, and it's good for a lot of reasons. I mean, I have some long-term patients that I've seen forever, and they, you know, they're doing great now. They check in like once a year just so they know I'm still there. So if something comes up, they know they can come back. And I don't have to, they don't have to go to a new therapist and catch up on, you know, 8-10 years of history since they were in for a therapy visit. And it gives them a lot of support. And hopefully I've taught them enough skills that, you know, that's all they'll ever need is just to touch base. But life is what happens while we're making plans. So
that's right.
I definitely encourage people to go and build a relationship with somebody so that when and if the bottom falls out, not necessarily for you, but somebody close to you, a friend, you can pick up the phone. Hey, can you get this guy in for me? I've known him forever. And you've got a relationship with a therapist.
I think you hit the nail on the head. One, you know, once you get him in, it's great because you can really build that relationship, and it can last over time. Going through your list, I'm just curious, what made you come up with it? What spawned that idea? Can you go into that a little bit?
Well, you know, I also teach at a university, and I see students all the time, athletes from the college team. You know, they come in and they got a problem. You know, they blew out their knee or you know, they're out for a couple of weeks, and they're sitting there. They can't work out. They feel isolated from the team, and they sit down, and they're like, yeah, you know, I try to talk to my buddies, and they tell me to shut up. I sound crazy, and this is a significant part of their life that all of a sudden they can't participate in, and they start, you know, what should I do? I mean, can I talk with you? I can't talk to my friends, and it just kind of started with everything else I'm doing with the hospitals and then the forensic work. It's like people don't know when. Hey, this is probably a good time to go see a therapist. So I came up with a list. And you know, it's like, okay, what do we do? 5, 10, 7, 9. I mean, and I just stopped at 9. I mean, it was just like, wow, I could just go on forever.
Well, you have a couple of them here that, I mean, they're kind of common sense. We look at these days up here in the Northeast, we're dealing with an opioid epidemic at this particular, you know, so substance to be able to cope, or even just mere addiction. That's kind of a common sense one. You're thinking about either killing yourself or hurting yourself. Definitely should go and see somebody. But you have a few other ones here that I think that are interesting. Say you see yourself taking responsibility for what other people's problems are. How does somebody realize that that's what they're doing and then go and seek that necessary help?
Well, what oftentimes is they realize that, hey, you know, I'm not getting my stuff done. I'm not getting my laundry done. You know, I should have been home tonight doing dinner for my kids. And why? Well, I'm helping a friend. And, you know, you involve everybody else and you don't take care of you and yourself and your needs. Mm-hmm. And it kind of creeps up on you. But it's kind of a natural coping skill. When your world is not being perfect, why not go out and help somebody whose life is so much worse than yours?
Okay. And then there was another one here. Notice that you're just not feeling yourself. Well, I get days like that all the time, but usually I snap out of it, you know, by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. And, you know, hey, if you're snapping out of it, you're probably all right.
Okay.
But again, go back to the first thing we talked about, going to see. You're just not feeling right. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a little mental hygiene you can go through and get a little cleaning and bounce something off a therapist and work through something to straighten it out and make it a lot better for yourself.
Good, Joe.
The one that caught my eye was when someone that knows you or cares about you asks you if you are doing all right. Can you go into that a little bit?
Well, we all know people who are, you know, are always busy and always working. They seem like their world is, you know, rocking and they got a good attitude, a good mood, but then you see them and they sit down and it just isn't right. And you see it, but they may not, because they're still processing and trying to keep their world moving forward. And it's kind of a red flag. You know, sometimes we burn the candle at both ends and we never take time to nurture the me in between those two flames. And when somebody's asking you that, it's a good idea to pay attention.
Right, so this is something that the person themselves may not recognize, but they're putting something out there that other people are kind of noticing and being concerned with. So
definitely.
Are you saying that it's probably okay for, you know, for someone to be open to that person, to say, you know, how are you doing? Is everything all right? Is that a good technique for people, in your opinion?
Kind of like, I definitely encourage that all the time. I think that helps everybody, and it opens a conversation that may not start that day. It might start 2 or 3 days later when your friend's like, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, it just hasn't been going right. I'm down in the dumps, or I can't believe I, you know, if you're in college, I failed this test, or whatever the issue is. But it may get you thinking that, hey, this is something I do need to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's a great tip because it opens the lines up for communication. It gets people talking. You know, sometimes I think people don't want to get too involved. And I think that as a result of that, the conversation goes by the wayside and the issue's never brought up. So I think it's an interesting tip that you have.
Well, I think with the technology age we have today, you know, we can put on a front so much easier than we ever could before. You know, you can go look at your Facebook and the world is just the perfect place, but you may be, you know, tying a noose in your closet. Mm. And nobody would know.
Right.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's funny you mentioned, I think you mentioned social media for half a second there. How about as far as social media use and some of your tendencies on social media? Is that something that one should take a close look at to perceive whether or not they should seek assistance or help? Because I got to tell you, when I social media is like free entertainment for me.
That's right.
I don't partake, but I see a lot of the nonsense and a lot of the things, a lot of the problems that people will cause or people will immerse themselves into, because, you know, you're not face to face with an individual, but yet you're willing to, you know, take that on as a mantle.
Exactly. And, you know, what the research is showing that if you're actively engaged in 7 or more platforms, whether it's, you know, Snapchat, Facebook, ad nauseum, you're 3 times more likely to be clinically depressed.
Ooh.
Wow. And, you know, some people like us, I mean, we're out there and we've got a media presence and we got a social media presence. And, you know, I think of a guy that works with me and does all that stuff, and I always check him because I maybe get on one, the rest of them they take care of. So
right,
so it's kind of difficult. But we also know that if it's it's one, two, maybe even three, the research suggests that it can actually be a healthy thing because you can connect with people and family that you wouldn't otherwise do, maybe even for the rest of your life. I know this past holiday season, Christmas, you know, we met up and got to spend time with a distant family, a part of our family, almost like a family reunion, and got to see people I hadn't, seen face to face in 9 or 10 years, and it was amazing.
Well, Doctor, we want to thank you for joining us. So if folks want to find out more about you and some of the stuff that you're working on with this nonprofit, how can they do that?
MainstreamMentalHealth.org. And we've got all our Twitter, Facebook, all our Instagram links, everything right there. You just follow that, and it's an informational site. And, if you feel up to it, we are not against taking donations as a 501c3. So.
Well, Dr. Cuba, we thank you for joining us, and we'll definitely look forward to having you back on again, depending on what the subject matter is.
Well, Kevin, I would love to, actually. I like the fact that you're a mental health practitioner, and you're out there on the air and giving people a place to go and vent. I love the previous section, by the way. I might even listen to the next one.
All right. Thank you, Doctor, and we'll definitely look forward to talking to you again soon.
Take care.
Awesome. Thank you.
You got it. There he is, Dr. John Cuber. And that was a good pickup by you, Joe. That is, as he is a clinical forensic psychologist.
Yes.
But he's also somebody who has the nonprofit going at www.mainstreammentalhealth.org.
Right. That is a very, very good guest, and I think that type of specialty is fantastic. There's not enough of them out there. I think he's doing a great service out there, and it was great to talk to him. So,
and it was good to see. And so, do you see you played a major role, and that's why I reached out to you over the weekend and said, "Hey, now little did I know that you had a connection with Mike Mullen."
Well,
I didn't know that.
Well, I think you're a miracle worker. I mean, you bring people together. That's what it comes down to. If this is you.
I get lucky sometimes.
Yes,
I get very, very lucky.
We
are we've got just a couple minutes left in the program. Of course, don't forget South Shore Live with Stan and the Gang coming up at 8 o'clock. Stay tuned to listen to some of their fun, some of the things that they do in their conversation. And of course, I believe they do like music. They got like the 9 o'clock hour where they get some musicians up here, and it's a fun program.
It is a fun program.
It is a fun program, but. We're gonna kind of delve into. We have from the WATD Sports Department, Brendan Conley, who you can hear in the mornings at 22 past and at 8 minutes before the hour on the South Shore's Morning News. You give us what's going on locally with sports, but I also know that you did a little bit of coverage over Gillette Stadium as the Patriots embarked on raising their fifth championship.
I did. I got the opportunity to go inside the locker room, get to interview players such as Chris Hogan.
Wait. Did you steal that shirt?
I did not steal the shirt. I wasn't in Houston, unfortunately.
Okay, all right. To check it out. All right,
almost.
All right, he's getting
almost.
An alibi.
I was 3,000 miles away when the disaster happened.
Sure, did you do the sports exchange prior to the kickoff?
I did a 10-minute phone interview for the show.
Oh.
Right.
I see. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that? What was the predictions?
So my prediction for the Super Bowl was, it didn't go as I had originally planned. I personally predicted a 28-24 score with the Patriots coming out on top. I did not foresee them falling behind by as much as 25 points late in the second half, and somehow they managed to overcome it in one of the greatest games of all time.
Right.
Frankly, it's the greatest comeback in a postseason game since the Bills did it to the Oilers in 1993 when they overcame a 35-3 deficit.
But that was a playoff game.
That was not the Super Bowl.
And a lot of times when a Super Bowl opponent falls 10 points or more behind, they're more likely than not to lose.
The last deficit was 10 points. No one's ever come back from a 10-point deficit.
Guess who that was. It was the New England Patriots.
No kidding.
They did it.
Did not know that.
And here's a fun fact. Going into that final quarter, the Patriots still trailed by 19 points. Whenever a team has trailed by 19 points, until last night, teams who were in the lead were 93-0.
Really?
Yep. Patriots are the first team to overcome that type of a deficit.
No kidding.
You remember that because they actually, I think they showed that that graphic during the game. What was your thought? Because watching it, I mean, it was, the first half was depressing, but we saw, was it the 49ers and the Ravens?
Yeah.
We're talking about a game of two halves where...
It was like the Ravens jumped up to that early lead and then the 49ers started to chip away, but they didn't make it all the way back.
No.
That was a different story.
They did not, but the fun part, I shouldn't say fun, but I was saying it earlier when I was talking with Jeff Deal, and I don't know, what year were you born?
I was born in 92.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the... Back in 85, well, it was actually in 86, but it was for the 1985 season. Mm-hmm. I remember watching that game because it was big. The Patriots had finally overcome the Miami Dolphins,
and then they ran into a buzzsaw.
They had a 3-point lead, which was kind of positive. I mean, I wasn't big on Tony Eason at the time, another guy who wore the number 11, mm-hmm. But. You know, from that point forward, it was all Bears. And it was just and so when the Patriots get down 21-0, I'm like, oh, man, I just got into the time machine. I'm like, it's 1985 all over again.
And see, what I was worried about at the time was that Atlanta has been a front-running team all year. During the last second half of the season, they only trailed for 12 minutes total, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting stat that I found out is that the Patriots, for that entire game, did not have any lead up until they won the game.
That's correct.
That's correct.
They trailed the entire game until they won.
Right.
And that's a pretty interesting fact.
But it was ominous because you look when they were down 21-3, and then it was 28-3. And they score the touchdown, and then Gostkowski, who has had, he had issues this year. Although I want to say that the kickers around the league were having issues with that moved back extra point. When he clanked it off the goalpost, I'm like, yeah, it's not the Patriots. It's not their game.
Well, you know what? That's a blessing in disguise, though. Because if he didn't miss that kick, maybe we wouldn't have gone for the extra two. And maybe that missed field goal would have been the one that actually lost it for us at the end of the game. So you never know. I mean, maybe it was a blessing in disguise.
Well, for the Patriots, it was a proverbial punch in the mouth to start the game. They, too, were a front-running team. Their defense usually was always played that bend-but-don't-break style of football, mm-hmm. and they really had only played one or two good teams going into the Super Bowl against Atlanta, who was the number one ranked offense.
Well, it depends on what sports prognosticator that you listen to who said that you know, the strength of the Patriots' schedule, you know, was a little bit suspect because they didn't really face any real, you know, real big-time quarterbacks or prolific offenses, you know?
That's what I was leaning towards. I mean, they faced the Seahawks and Russell Wilson. Pretty good test right there. But then up until Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game with Ben Roethlisberger, you didn't really see many other top-tier quarterbacks that they played against. And then they go face the AP MVP in Matt Ryan, and it took a great effort in the second half. And over the course of 10 years, from 2004 till 2013, the Patriots really didn't have that type of a defense that could make multiple stops at once.
Mm.
And they did at the most critical moment of
Trey
all.
Flowers.
Yeah, I mean,
phenomenal.
Getting to the quarterback, and once I saw Matt Ryan fumble the football late in that, as they were starting to make their comeback,
strip sack, yeah,
and. And that's when I knew that levees were starting to break and the Pats were going to start to make a comeback.
Well, I just think that the Patriots, they have the guts and they have the heart to do it. You know, I don't necessarily buy into the strength of schedule. I think that definitely plays a part in something.
Mm.
But, you know, Joe Flacco isn't anybody that we can really just turn a blind eye to. He can hurt you when he wants to. And four out of the past 5 years, the AFC has won the Super Bowl. So the teams in the AFC have traditionally been good over the past 5 years, and the teams haven't really changed that much. I think there was a slow year overall in the NFL, and I don't necessarily think that even though the quarterbacks were quote-unquote better than the AFC side, the teams on the other side, they were hurt the entire time. So, sure. You know, when you have someone like Jordy Nelson out, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is great, but if he's missing his, you know, in the defense,
receiver.
Exactly, and the defense wasn't great at all.
No.
Is it
that
still
too many injuries?
Right.
Well, I was gonna ask, was this the all-time greatest comeback or the all-time biggest choke?
I think comeback.
I think it's more of a comeback because what happened was Atlanta had chances, but the Patriots took them out of the game. They physically took them out of the game.
Now, are you just saying that because I heard a rumor that you might be connected to somebody on that Atlanta?
Did.
I heard that you might be related to somebody on the Atlanta roster.
I may or may not be.
Did you get him to take the oath before you sat down in that chair?
I'm dying to know what's going on right now. Who are you related
to? Well, it's not by blood, but it's by marriage. And Matt Ryan is married into my family.
Matt Ryan?
Matt Ryan, yes.
No kidding.
Yeah, so going on, I wanted to see a perfect game. And I'll say that was one of the best games of all time.
But who are you rooting for? Were you rooting for family? You were rooting for the home team.
I was rooting for a great game. You know me.
Oh, I love it. He wants to get a good Christmas present, I think.
You think so?
I think so. He's not picking sides.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, that's right.
But I will say this. I will be at the Patriots parade for the celebrations. There will be some coverage, and we will hopefully get some great sound bites for WATD this week.
You know, what is usually the case is the team that loses the Super Bowl, they're hard-pressed to return to the playoffs. Well, to either the big game or the playoffs.
Yeah.
How does this affect the Falcons?
I think it improves them because they were a front-running team all year. And to face a team like the Patriots with how great and how much experience they have had over the course of the last 10 years in the playoffs, I think it will help them improve next year. And guess what? Guess what the first game on the schedule is going to be?
Patriots
versus the Falcons.
Does that mean that Roger. Does that mean that Mr. Goodell will invite himself to Gillette Stadium?
I heard Mr. Kraft did invite him, but really? We'll see. We'll see if he shows up.
That's going to be very interesting.
It was very interesting to see him handing over the MVP trophy earlier today.
There was no handshake.
There was no handshake.
Yeah.
Just a little awkward
call
pause.
Interesting. I'd call that sweet, sweet justice is what I would call that.
Yeah.
I think that needed to happen.
It didn't need to happen. What about the Patriots? Patriots return to the Super Bowl, or the Patriots?
Like I say every year, I think the Patriots are going to be there. The question is whether they'll shoot themselves in the foot. I've always seen.
Well, it's going to depend on their free agent turnover.
That too. Because
you get Dante Hightower, you got Martellus Bennett, who's going to be up. You've got members of your secondary who are up. There's a lot of players.
My biggest question is what happens to Gronkowski moving forward. Do you think
made him expendable?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, he's one of the greatest tight ends of all time when he's at the top of his game and he's not hurt.
He got hurt that Seattle game, and after that Seattle game,
they brought him back too early.
Yeah, he was done.
Do you happen to know how many games he's played over the past few years?
I don't have the exact stat on.
No, but he's still a valuable asset.
Oh, I would definitely keep him.
And he's also Brady. He's also Brady's binky too.
I think a binky with what will happen with Gronk will depend on what happens to Martellus Bennett.
I agree
this
with that.
Offseason. Yeah. I mean, he's basically the same type of guy. Not as big of a weapon, obviously, at their best. But going forward, will he sign back here or will he take off?
We'll see.
That's the key.
That'll be answered in the coming weeks. Brendan, thank you for joining us.
Anytime.
Joe, thank you for being the wingman.
Thanks for having me.
It's another Monday Night Talk. Till next week at 6:15 p.m. Have a great evening. Yeah.